Hello and welcome to another episode from the Specialist Learning Disability Service podcast. This is Your Journey. This is Jenna Messenger, Specialist Learning Disability Nurse in Mental Health in our service. And today I am joined with the fabulous Claire Goodyear, who is doing an apprenticeship with Children and Family Health Devon in training to be a learning disability and neurodiversity nurse. Welcome, Claire. This is your journey. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you for having me.
I thought that you and me could have a bit of a chat and just help everyone who's listening to be able to just understand a bit about what it is like to be a student learning disability nurse, what the role entails, and thinking like families and young people who are going to come across you maybe in their role or other student nurses, it's really helpful to kind of think about what that may look like for them. So we are just going to have, as I always say, a bit of an informal chat and just learn a bit more, if that's okay.
I can try.
Thank you. So what would be really good is just to hear what brought you into this specific area of nursing, please.
So firstly, thank you for having me.
Thank you, Claire.
My roots into learning disability nurse training has been quite unique and in some ways quite unplanned. I have always worked with children with learning disabilities. I'm not going to tell you how long for, because that will age me. But roles that I've held over the years, I've had the opportunity to sort of co-manage play services for children with learning disabilities, which obviously are around play and community access and participation and peer interactions and all of those really enriching experiences. I've also worked as a teaching assistant in a special needs school, and that led me to being able to qualify as a teacher for children with learning disabilities. That role allowed me to work alongside learning disability nurses, which is what allowed me to realise that the role existed. So I then joined the children's learning disability team, and this course came into being, and I have jumped at the opportunity.
Can I just ask, where's the course to? Is it in Devon?
So the course is run from Marjon University, which is in Plymouth.
And how long is the course?
So I am on the second year of the master's programme. So I've done 3 years in total. So I'm nearly at the end, hopefully.
Nearly at the end of your journey. Can I ask, Claire, just what brought you going right back those few years that we're not obviously going to share with how many years? I'm not going to ask you to do that, but thinking back, it's what brought you into this field of working with children and young people with learning disability?
I think my first qualification was nursery nursing, and that allowed me some placements where I was supporting children who just didn't quite seem to be getting what they needed and what they and I think that led on to me experiencing other settings, such as I've already said, sort of play settings and things, where I experienced firsthand the barriers that very much exist for our children in terms of accessing everyday experiences such as swimming, opportunities for meaningful connection with peers, accessing local attractions, play opportunities that are developmentally and age appropriate, you know, those really enriching experiences that our children, that all children should be benefiting from. And I think that's what's driven me to where I am now.
Wow, I think that's a really good point. Like you said, that there was the sentence there about you said every child deserves to have that access. And for the children and young people who access our service, we can find that, like you said, there can be some barriers and challenges in the world that don't make it as accessible. And that can drive us as learning disability nurses. I think what I hear there and what we share, I think, in learning disability nursing is that passion to go, we want children and young people and adults with learning disabilities to have those same rights, the same access, the same experiences that should be accessible for anyone. And that's really important that we make sure that they are able to have those experiences. And thinking, Claire, like I may ask a family and a young person if I can bring a student nurse into their home or maybe visiting school or respite. And I'm always very grateful that when parents or carers or the young person feels that's something they can accommodate. Just wonder, Claire, what would you be saying to maybe a family or carer who may come into our service and we ask them if we can bring a student learning disability nurse? What would you say to them? What does that bring in an experience for them to have a student come along?
I think hopefully, I think hopefully that what I would bring, or maybe other student learning disability nurses would bring, would be a bit of a fresh perspective. I
Yeah.
think we have to be really mindful that we are entering families and we're entering their
Yes.
lives. We have to be, and I have to think. I think we have to be mindful that we could be perceived as sort of yet another professional. From reflecting on discussions I've been able to have with parents and children, they often have almost an experience of a sea of faces. They're not really sure who does what, why professionals are involved. They might have a number of professionals at once, they might just have one. And I think that families should be expecting enthusiasm from me as a learning disability nursing student for that commitment to building relationships that are therapeutic and also sustainable. I think we often find ourselves in and out of families' lives as new challenges arise or are experienced.
What does it mean to you, Claire? So this is just asking about your thoughts. What does it mean to you becoming a learning disability nurse?
I think it means lots of different things, and I think it means different things on different days, depending on where I am, who I'm with. But I think the thread that holds true is that training to be a learning disability nurse is so much more than ticking boxes. I feel that it's definitely a vocation, and it comes from a place of personal experiences. It's often And those experiences have identified injustices, like I've described earlier, that creates that drive and commitment to the children and young people that I get to work alongside. I am most definitely learning every day about the continuous need to challenge stigma and work to promote inclusion and to absolutely serve as an advocate for our families and our children that don't always get the attention that they deserve.
Thinking we know that there has been a decline and there is still a decline in learning disability nurses. What does that feel like for yourself, Claire, who's training as a learning disability nurse in an area where we know that we aren't having the uptake as other nursing professions?
Absolutely. This is a conversation I've obviously had lots with other students that are on the program with me. I think there is a decline in nursing numbers in recruitment
Yes.
in general,
Okay.
as we know. I think learning disability nurses are the smallest part of the nursing workforce. It is really exciting that there is a recognition of that gap, and the course such as the one that I am lucky enough to be on is supporting that gap and working quite proactively. But I think for me, I think it's finding those opportunities within placements to really understand the role of a learning disability nurse, because if there are less learning disability nurses, there are less places where they are working within, which means that for me as a student, seeking out those opportunities and seeking an understanding of what that role looks like within the many different contexts that learning disability nurses are working within can be quite challenging. And I think for families, the lack of learning disability nurses or the lower number of learning disability nurses is going to have an impact on the families and children that access the specialty.
In that way, Claire, you said about the impact if we continue to decline in our numbers, and you said about the impact for children and families. What do you think the impact would be? We've heard that you were sharing about advocacy, that ability to challenge, to think about access, to think about opportunities. So there's quite a lot I'm hearing in the learning disability nursing role that it brings alongside. I would be, in my experience, thinking with families who have described the fight to be able to have that. Do you think then if we decline in numbers, like you were saying, the impact is that ability to come alongside and strengthen the voice, and hopefully I see us as we can provide a support for parents and carers when they are feeling that exhausted, to still say, we're still here, we are still believing in the things that you are advocating for your young person. And I wonder, without that, do you think that would be maybe possibly harder for families and carers if we do lose the numbers?
I think so, and I think that can be evidenced by the leader reports, which are demonstrating that we still have a very long way to go in ensuring equality of access for people with a learning disability in comparison to the general population. And I think, I don't know what to say now.
That's all right. Take a moment.
I think from what I've seen, as my experiences as a student and my experiences prior to this student role, I've seen a real first-hand difference that specialist nurses can make in the lives of the children and young people that they are supporting. And I think there's a real strength in supporting general services to understand what is happening for our children and young people and what they need in order to receive the healthcare that they are entitled to and have a right to access. And I think that by increasing our numbers and from that the numbers of people and children that we can support, that is going to help to close those gaps in inequality by making sure that nobody's being left behind.
Thank you. What I will do is we will just signpost, because Claire mentioned the leader report, and that's just for those who may not have heard of the leader report. So it comes through NHS England, and it's a report and it's reviews, and we're learning from lives and deaths of people with a learning disability and autistic people. We know that there are increased challenges often with poorer health, physical health and mental health for this population of people. And as Claire's already said, accessing healthcare and some of the challenges. And so it's about learning and how we can improve locally in respect of what Claire's already highlighted so well, is that access to healthcare, play, social development, communication. What are the barriers? Where are the health inequalities? And how can we keep trying to change this, which I think as learning disability nurses we're really passionate about. Thank you, Claire, for that. I wondered, in your, again, any comfortable what you can share, but is there, when you've been training as a learning disability nurse, any experiences that you feel will carry you forward once you qualify, that you go, that experience, be it positive or it might have been an experience that was really challenging, but it will continue to drive you in everything you've described about the underpinnings of being a learning disability nurse?
There have been many.
Of course, and yeah.
And I'm sure
that we had
there will
all
be many
the hours
more.
With it, they're going to keep us.
I know.
I'm
how long do you have?
Yeah.
What would I say? So there are many moments that have shaped me and will continue to shape me. And those happen in all sorts of places, with all sorts of people. Sometimes it's a discussion with a parent. Sometimes it might be a corridor conversation or a conversation over Teams with a colleague. It might be a direct, and usually a direct interaction with a child or a young person. I feel that that's where reflection's really, really important within what I'm doing, within my student process. But I think prior to this, I was naturally quite a reflective person, but I often think it's the really tiny moments that happen, that it's not until you go back later that you realize just how big those moments are in their impact on you as in your development, as you kind of move forward. And I think a lot of my learning comes from the surprises that the children and young people tend to throw in your direction. And I think for me, I'm always really quite excited by the child that says no,
yeah,
the first time.
Or we're okay with that.
And I think it's those moments, isn't it? And recognizing those moments and taking space to reflect back on those moments. And that's what I really, really love about working within the team and alongside the professionals that are involved in supporting the young people that I'm working alongside, is those really enriching conversations, which really help to remind me of how dynamic this role is.
Definitely. I mean, I was thinking about when we worked with a young person, and we can signpost again to intensive interaction, which is, mm-hmm. in my description, I've always said it's the permission of the young person that I'm working with to get inside the world and be with them. And just be there, just be alongside them, being them with nothing that I am expecting of them, just if I can be in their world. And that moment where we had that eye contact, that smile, that recognition, that instead of us trying to pull that young person into the world that we all live in, it's like, I'm just gonna come and be. And to me, it's those moments that still, I'm not going to say, I could say how long I've been nursing, 2009, many years. Yeah, continue, like you said, are just incredible. And they can sound so small sometimes to the outside world, but when you're in this field of work, it is just the most amazing privilege. Claire, On that back of that, my own reflections too of being a learning disability nurse, I wondered, well, I was talking about like what can be seen possibly by others as a small celebration. As a student learning disability nurse and thinking about working with families, carers, and young people who access our service, is there times where you've supported to be able to see a celebration in or the family or carer or even the young person, and you've had that shared experience together that you might be able to just share with us today, please?
Yes, absolutely.
Thank
I
you.
love celebrating with children and families.
Nice.
What I would say is that sometimes I think it's really hard to see success or achievement within the bigger picture of what's happening. Our families are living incredibly busy lives with and often experiencing really quite challenging. It might be moments, it might be challenges in terms of accessing a service. It might, there are lots and lots of dynamics at play. And I think I work really hard to make sure that these like really tiny but really big achievements are recognised. And I think that's where it's key to have the time to really understand what a child and their family's day-to-day looks like. There's a real value in visiting all the spaces that a child interacts with or building a relationship with the people that they come into contact with and they are interacting with. I think celebrating achievements really, really does matter, and I think it's key in supporting a family and child to build confidence. And I think this confidence is really important because that drives independence, which also puts a onus on me to ensure that I am appropriately goal setting when I'm working on an intervention alongside a family.
There was a, excuse me, a part there that I picked up, which I was thinking because I was working with a parent the other day, and we were talking about relationship building. And what you were saying there is the importance of the relationship building. Absolutely, do we consider the young person? But you were right about that relationship building around the people who are in that young person's life. And I just wondered, as a student learning disability nurse, why do you think that's so important to have that relationship built with the people around that young person?
I think there's lots of different answers to that question. I think that families truly know their child best. I think by listening, we pick up on things that services alone might miss. I think it builds trust. It ensures that our support is shaped by sort of real experience and not sort of the professional experience. I think for me, it's really, really important that we are curious about what is happening for that child and for the family to ensure that what we're advocating for is what that child or young person is wanting, and that we're not buying into a story or a narrative that's being built around that child. I think all family, I think that's really, really key in ensuring that what we're providing is person-centered care. And I think part of my role is being able to sit in those more difficult conversations where there is a gap between perhaps what a child and family would like or need, when that looks different to what perhaps a service is able to provide. And I think those conversations are really, really key because they help me to ensure that I am working in a way that is person-centered.
What is person-centered, Claire? How would you describe that in your own words?
How would I describe person-centered care? I think it means seeing the whole person, not just the diagnosis. I think with the children that we're supporting, it's understanding what's important for every person involved in that. So I think it's kind of thinking about family centred care, but also the individuals that make up that family, and the dynamics that are there, and, you know, kind of ensuring that you're encapsulating the wishes and kind of choices and kind of dreams held by all of those people, which is not an easy thing to do. That definitely doesn't come without challenge, and I think one of those real challenges is ensuring the time and being able to work in a way that is flexible to ensure that we are including, for example, the wishes of both parents. Maybe one parent can attend meetings and perhaps another parent can't, or, you know, so, and I think that's a real strength of our team, that we do really try and work in a way that seeks to meet the needs of the child and the family in the kind of best way possible, really.
The bit that I also was thinking when you're talking about the young person is the young person's voice, and when you're working with families and carers, how do you get, and I suppose it's very individual, but that young person's voice, I am thinking, is really important to be able to be heard, like you said, within the family too, so you're hearing the family, but it's really important, I'm thinking, to have that young person's voice, and that comes through relationship building too.
Yeah, I think for me, it will come as no surprise to you, Jenna, that communication is my absolute passion. and communication absolutely sits at the heart of everything we're doing. I work in a way that is very child-led in terms of how they are communicating. I think that the key to remember about communication is that it is how we connect, and without good communication, that can leave children and families feeling isolated. I've not answered that right at all.
You have. Oh, I was going to ask, is I'm really thoughtful that I'm being general in the ask of that, but you were saying like communication is really key. Is there things that can help maybe at a very foundation level in respect of communication, Claire, that you may advise any family or carers who are listening today to support their young person? So is it thinking of different ways in which you can see your young person? They'll be showing that they want to communicate maybe in a way. So do you think sometimes it's trying different things, so maybe seeing if they respond to a picture, saying things out loud, what it is, photos, sometimes we call it objects of reference, don't we, where we might have something to be able to say, I've got your swimming bag to show we're going swimming. Just thinking of those foundation levels then of layering communication for our young people.
Absolutely. I work or approach communication completely from what the child or young person is offering to me. Sometimes that might be that they don't want to communicate with me, and mm-hmm. I try not to be offended by that. But generally, I let children lead, and I work to uphold and kind of celebrate every way a child is communicating, and I'm always keen and kind of curious to learn more ways to sort of communicate, and as you've said, whether that's words or pictures, it might be gestures, it might be devices, they might be using photographs, they might be signing, their signs might look different to your understanding of how that sign looks, which is always a lovely thing to discover. But I think one of the key components for me for communication is creating the environment that allows the space for that communication to be happening. And I always try and remember the sort of power of pausing and allowing silence to kind of create that space for communication attempts to occur.
I think sometimes we're not always good at, like you said, the silence that can sit between and wanting to fill it. And actually, like you said, getting comfortable with that, because the young people we work with often need that time to process or think about. So we can very much rush through something and presume they may not have understood. So we feel that silence, like you said, and just allowing for it to sit. And then we might see a look or a movement that indicates actually, okay, it just needed to sit, and for us to be, like you said, comfortable with that silence that sits between.
I think as well on that, there's a real need to make sure that you are, when I'm visiting a child or a young person, that I'm considering the time of day that I'm going, that I'm considering perhaps what I'm intruding on. You know, if I would much rather go swimming than talk to me or communicate with me. So I think it's really being able to be as flexible as you can be and developing quite a thick skin.
Absolutely. I would say. We are more than experienced, the young people, where they're like, no, wave goodbye, get our shoes to the front door to indicate that, it's time for us to go. We're okay with that. We are okay. We know that it's not personal. It might be personal, but we don't take it personal.
I think as well, it's being really curious about what is behind the communication or the kind of presentation that we're perhaps trying to unpick and understand the sort of underlying sort of functions of. I think that's really key. And I think sometimes it's working out what's driving a particular communication and what we can do to ensure that that communication is being upheld and listened to.
I totally agree. There was something I just was thoughtful that in my experience, you said about young people often form their own signs. And so we would be using the Makaton signs of communication, but the young person, like you said, may develop for various reasons their own. And it made me think that it can be really helpful because the young people can go to different places, to have a book that visually may show the sign that they've got, a photograph of the young person or a video that can be shared. So because it can be difficult with new workers coming in, that's what can be signed as toilet actually can mean something different. So when you were saying about the communication, to help reduce the distress of the young person, is that actually everyone is aware of the sign that's used may not be as toilet. It can be a sign for cake, but they mean toilet. Or it's about, we would model it in a way, but actually, like you said, it's thinking about ways that you can share that communication with others, that my child signs this way, which means this. So then it would reduce that distress, because that young person may be communicating that I want to drink or this, and if it's not understood, that can lead to some behavior distress, because they're going, I told you, it's just not being received and understood.
Yes, and I often think that communication attempts, particularly within very busy environments or within very busy stressful routines, that those communication initiations are possibly missed, and then I think that then that can then escalate into something else, and it's not always perhaps clear what's gone wrong there, and that needs some unpicking. And I think a large part of person-centered care is ensuring that the people that are supporting that young person have the information available that allows them to support in the best way possible for that child or young person.
It made me think we've had conversations, obviously, outside this podcast episode, but when you were talking about communication, it made me think of an experience you shared about being a student learning disability nurse in hospital and the value of a hospital passport and having that information to help someone coming in with a learning disability. And I just wondered, Claire, if you could share what a health passport is, but also as a nurse training, what that meant to have that information in a hospital setting. Because I'm thinking there may be nurses, other healthcare assistants and professionals in hospitals who hopefully will be joining and listening into our podcast, but it'd be really good to hear what difference does that make in respect to communication and understanding when you haven't met someone before, who has communication difficulties, to be able to express what they need while they're in hospital or GP care or any of our primary or secondary care services.
Absolutely. I've absolutely seen been I've been I've seen health passports from, as you say, from the perspective of a student nurse within sort of a clinical space. I've also been involved in the creation of health passports for children that I have been supporting, and it was really interesting to be on the sort of receiving end of a health passport when I hadn't been involved in the writing of it. And what it really made me reflect on is, absolutely, I found it really helpful that there was a health passport, but I think there is work to be done on the quality of what goes into a health passport. And I think it's not until you're in a situation where you're supporting somebody in an environment that they really don't want to be in. They may be experiencing a lot of distress, they may be in a lot of pain, and we know that's going to have an impact on their ability to communicate, as it does for everybody. But I think ensuring that what is captured on those health passports is going to be helpful and accessible to the person on the receiving end of reading that health passport is really, really key. And I think it shows that there is perhaps a need for more joined upness between services to ensure that these documents are completed in a way that adds a huge amount of value to the person who's reading it on sort of the other side, who perhaps doesn't have as much exposure to supporting somebody with a learning disability. So they are very reliant, understandably, on what's written on that page. Does that make sense?
It does. I just wondered, and if you there's just a couple of things you'd share, Claire, in those top tips, what would you say would be the key things that you, if there was a family pen or maybe a professional who's gone, do you know what? I will link through on our website a health passport. Could you just give, in your experience, just some thought what you would say would be really vital information? I appreciate everyone's individual, but just from your own reflections, what you think, or that would be the key things I would say would be really helpful when writing a health passport to think about.
Based on my recent experience,
Yes.
and sort of reflecting on that, I would say it's what expressive communication looks like, how receptive communication is best supported. But it's, for me, it's almost little things such as, what position does that adult, I mean, it wasn't it, I'm re kind of reflecting on my adult experiences here. Sleep position, what does that look like? It's those nuances that we perhaps wouldn't think about until you're in a situation where you have somebody in your care that isn't able to share that, and you're not easily able to access that information. So I think for me, it will come as no surprise that communication is going to be a large part of my answer. But yeah, those tinier bits around sleep position, if that's appropriate, it might not be that that's appropriate for that adult, and you know, but I think to be in a situation where you are sort of reading through a health passport and you can't find those bits of information, you really are in the dark and about yeah. how to provide the best possible care, which is obviously what we're wanting to do.
Yeah, what are your hopes for the career of learning disability nursing? What do you hope to see? Hopefully we will lift our uptake, like you said, of nursing in general, but also in learning disability. What's your hope for learning disability nursing? And I know it's a huge question to ask, but yeah, just wondered, what do you hope for? And if you can find the words to even put such a magnitude of a question into an answer.
My simple answer to that really, yeah. really complex question, I think yeah. my biggest hope is that for myself is that I am able to be a really strong and accurate advocate for the children and families that I get to work alongside. For my own professional development, I would like to specialise even more in communication and play, and looking at how we can incorporate appropriate tailored play opportunities that are going to reduce anxiety in clinical spaces and promote access to health interventions, so that there aren't delays in health interventions because we're needing to work on a desensitization program. I think that would be a real hope of mine, and that in turn would help to close some of these gaps in health inequalities. I'd also love, this will come as no surprise to you, Jenna, I would love to see more emphasis on communication training for all professionals and a greater awareness of the rights and needs of children with learning disabilities throughout healthcare and wider.
And we're very appreciative of the Oliver McGowan training that is being accessible now, which is helping, like you said, through an incredible loss and tragedy that we know shouldn't happen. And it is lifting us to be able to, like you said, understand communication and be able to think about, like you said, presentations and mental health in learning disability and autistic people, to be able, like you said, to close those gaps and improve services for people with learning disability and autistic people. And like you said, so we continue to see that we are reducing the risk of premature deaths in this population. And I strive, like you, as learning disability nurses, that we continue to see that we are part of that active closing of those gaps. I'm going to say we're looking to bring this podcast episode to a close. I like to think about, with the person that I've been talking with, Claire, about some messages of what I consider the people that we are supporting with. So my first one is, what would you like to say if you have the privilege? I always think of it as a privilege when we're working with families and carers. What would you like to say to them if they have that experience of you coming in as a student learning disability nurse role? What would be your thing you'd like to leave with them today?
I think if I was to share a message with families and carers and siblings.
Yeah, thank you.
I would want them to know that they're not alone, that the knowledge that you hold of your child or young person is invaluable, and that your experiences really matter. I think if I was going to talk specifically to the children and young people that I get to support and sort of walk alongside, I think I would firstly say that you can absolutely say no. That's really important. And that my support is about how to support you to get what you want from your life.
That is incredibly well worded and from the heart, Claire, so thank you. My last ask is for you four professionals. So I ask you in that consideration for any professionals who are going to meet somebody with a learning disability for the first time, what would your message be to them? How would you say that you would say, just what advice may you give to them about their approach?
I think I feel that I should say that I absolutely don't always get everything right, but I am willing to learn and adapt and be flexible and try again. But I think for sort of professionals that are perhaps new to working with children with learning disabilities, I think I would say take your time, listen to families, listen to the children, stay flexible in your thinking. And I think I always learn the most when I've got the child at the centre of whatever it is I'm doing. And if I feel like I haven't got the child at the centre of what I'm doing, I need to change what I'm doing. And that would be my piece of advice.
Wow, that is, yeah, incredibly well considered and really practical, really reflective, and that I feel that professionals would be able to take that. And I really like you said, that we are trying our best. We can learn from an experience, but where we can't get it wrong is if we keep the child at the centre and the appreciation of the family carers. And you're right, the siblings and extended family around them in our minds of when we're completing our work. Claire, thank you so much for giving your time to be able to share your experiences, some real thoughts that I think that people could take forward. And I'm just incredibly grateful for your time. And yeah, just wish you the best of luck with the rest of your course. And yeah, just thank you for what you're doing for the children, young people and families, because I think there is this real uniqueness that sits with us as learning disability nurses. I think it's a real passion and authenticity in what we do. I feel it's a real privilege. And I hear when you talk, it reminds me of what we stand for, why we're here, and that we will continue to be alongside in the future as needed for people with a learning disability. So thank you.
Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. I'm sure we'll have you back again.
When I'm qualified.
Absolutely. Thank you, Claire.